Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
How about this?
Here's John Williams.
Friday. Mm-mm. It is Friday, right? Hey, it's John Williams. How are you? It's 107. We are in the Allstate Showcase studio on Michigan Avenue. We sure appreciate you tuning in. I hope you call or text me right now or later on as the fancy moves you. 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. That's the text line, too. A little later on, our Bright Side segment. Have you listened to The Bright Side? Where will you be at 2:40 this afternoon? That's where people call in. That could be you. Or they text in and they say, here's some good news in my world. Why I'm smiling. Seems to me like I've been saying this forever, but isn't it always true? By Friday, you could just use a segment on the radio where people are just saying good things, fun things, happy things, things that are making them smile. We'll ask you for your Bright Side at 2:40 here on WGN. Big story, of course, today is Donniegate Part 2 now. We thought that we were done with this story or that we knew everything that we thought we needed to know. Turns out there's still more to it. You know, I got to tell you, though, as we were talking about this in the hallway today, and they said, well, there's this Russian agent that was also at the meeting. I said, how does that change the story, right? I mean, if there was, in fact, an elephant in the room, not knowing that doesn't really change what was most problematic to a lot of us, and that is that they took the meeting with the expectation that from the Russians they would get dirt on the Clinton campaign. So if there was another Russian agent, and by that I mean he's actually somebody who does lobbying now, but did have some sort of training in espionage or the military, okay, fine, this guy was in there. I don't like that either. It seems to be a little dishonest because they said that was everything, but does it fundamentally change the story? Andy Field from ABC News will join us in a little while. We'll talk to him about the latest on that. It's interesting because as much as this has been a sort of preoccupation with the country, the White House has been trying to either dismiss it or trivialize it or take our attention off of it. At the end of the day, maybe we should. I don't know what we is, but obviously important things include the healthcare redo, the budget and tax plan. How will that affect you? Maybe you have on your bucket list of things you'd like to see happen, the wall get built, whatever it is that the federal government is supposed to do for us. Maybe those concrete things that really would directly affect you and me should be getting done, should be getting more of our attention. But they're not, because we are what we are and the media is what it is. That may be the single biggest failing of the Trump administration so far. That they can say it's unfair, or the Republican Party, or anybody that disagrees with the tone of my voice. You may not like it, you may criticize it, but it is what it is. If you thought for 2 minutes that Americans didn't love a good soap opera starring the White House, then you are much mistaken. If you didn't think for a minute that the media won't be relentlessly curious, and if you kick sand in their face, maybe even vindictively so, then you don't understand the media. And you may say that's unfair, that's inappropriate, or that's taking our eye off the ball. You could win that argument. Maybe history will say that you were right. But I'm telling you, I'm right now. This is the world that they live in, you and I live in, and that's what's happening. It's the Donnie Trump Jr. story. Donniegate, somebody called it. So in order to say, okay, this really isn't such a big deal, none other than Kellyanne Conway, who has sort of come out of mothballs the last week or so, was on Fox News a couple days ago, and she had a couple of note cards, and she was sort of having some, as she said, fun with words.
I just want to review, in case you run out of time, this is how I see it so far. This is to help all the people at home. What's the conclusion? Collusion? No, we don't have that yet. I see illusion and delusion. So just so we're clear, everyone, four words. Conclusion? Collusion, no. Illusion, delusion, yes. I just thought we'd have some fun with words.
So she's holding up the note cards that have those. They're so meme ready. And I don't know that they should think like that. You know, think like your detractors. How could this go wrong? What if somebody else took the words on those white cards she was holding up on Fox News, the fun words, and put different words in there? Would we regret that then? I don't know that they think like that. I don't know that they should. But boy, the world sure has. Stephen Colbert decided to have some fun with words.
Trump Jr. tried to articulate, but that turned out to incriminate. Remember, it's something even an idiot would anticipate. And now he's going to be an inmate.
I don't know if he's going to be an inmate or not. I don't know. I'll ask Andy Field what the latest thinking on that is, on this story, which is just a few days old. But the problematic part for me, too, is that when Donald Trump Jr. did decide to come clean, he's Mr. Transparent now because he went on with Sean Hannity. And Hannity said to him, okay, are there any other emails? Is there anything else we need to know about this story? Remember, this was after they'd done the nuts and bolts and meat and potatoes of the meeting. And he said, okay, and I think this is a good question for Sean Hannity to ask. I find myself asking it sometimes, too, where you don't even know what else is, you don't know the unknown. So you just say, is there anything else I should know? Is there anything else I should be asking you?
I just want the truth to get out there. I mean, that's part of why I released all the stuff today. I wanted to get it all out there.
But this is
everything.
They're
trying to drag out the story, in all fairness. Yeah. You know, they have it. They want to drip a little bit today, drip a little bit then. So I was like, here it is. I'm more than happy to be transparent about it, and I'm more than happy to cooperate with everyone.
So as far as you know, as far as this incident's concerned, this is all of it.
This is everything. This is everything.
Hannity said, as far as you know, this is all of it. And the president's son said, this is everything. This is everything. And then 2 days later, we find out that there was another guy in there who, if the Russian lawyer, if that woman is sort of just a tangent to the story, she didn't have the goods, the other guy is a little more, maybe by title, significant, right? I mean, I can't pronounce the names of all of these people. Apologies for that. But his name is Renat, R-I-N-A-T. He denies any current ties to Russian spy agencies. He was born in Russia. He served in the Soviet military. He emigrated to the United States. He holds dual citizenship. And he said, I never thought this would be such a big deal, to be honest with you. Really? Really? Really, ex-Soviet spy, you didn't think it would be a big deal that there you are in a meeting with the president's son during the transition?
And campaign manager.
And campaign manager and whatever Jared Kushner's hat was that day. He had been working against the Magnitsky Act, a set of sanctions against alleged Russian human rights violators. Given the email traffic suggesting the meeting, and now I'm reading from NBC News, which broke this story, given the email traffic suggesting the meeting was part of a Russian effort to help Trump's candidacy, the presence at the meeting of a Russian-American with suspected intelligence ties is likely to be of interest to Special Counsel Robert Mueller, NBC writes. We actually, so you wonder, well, what was said? Because remember, Jared is here to assure us, Donald Jr., we haven't heard from Jared Kushner much on this, but the president's son is here to assure you that there was no evidence, there was no talk of dirt. They were interested in dirt. There was no dirt delivered. It was more about you do a favor on this one piece of legislation and we'll see about the adoption policies.
And you keep saying, or we all keep saying, it's about human rights violations. What the Magnitsky Act does is, as I understand it, freeze or control
the assets
of the people, Russians, really wealthy Russians who've taken their money out of the country to shield it from Russia and bring it to the U.S. or elsewhere. That's frozen. So it's about human rights, but it's about hundreds of millions of dollars that is being frozen, as I understand it.
And Vladimir Putin was outraged when this bill became law. And maybe that's it. Maybe that's what's really driving it. It's not, you know, a human rights issue. I mean, you wouldn't think that would be the sort of thing that they would throw down on.
But money,
they might.
Right. The U.S. imposed it over their human rights abuses. They froze these assets with the Magnitsky Act.
So what was said in that meeting? Steve, we have here on the John Williams Show obtained exclusive audio about the conversation.
Good morning, sir. A pleasant good morning to you, sir.
It's the beginning of the meeting.
Good morning.
Please permit me to apologize for this unusual disturbance, but we're hoping for some conversations, please. Good morning, young boy.
Be Jared
we
Kushner.
Are two strangers, sir, and we wish to speak with you. Yes, that is most exactly correct.
So that's the beginning of it, but that's all that I've got so far.
Are you waiting for the translation, or what's...
I know some of you... Right. I know some of you are thinking that sounds like Alan Arkin and a clip from The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming. But it's not. That's the beginning of the meeting where they wanted to have a conversation. It's all I've got for you so far. The president, though, was... when did he do the Cray comment? Are you familiar with that?
No. What is it?
The president was speaking. I have the official, honest to goodness, I do, White House transcript of the president's remarks to reporters. He was talking about the border wall. And this is what the president said about the border wall. If you're driving, you might want to pull over. He said, one of the things with the wall is you need transparency. There's the T word again. In this case, he means it literally. Quote, you have to be able to see through it. In other words, if you can't see through that wall, so it could be a steel wall with openings, but you have to have openings because you have to see what's on the other side of the wall. And I'll give you an example, the president continues. As horrible as it sounds, when they throw large sacks of drugs over, and if you have people on the other side of the wall, you don't see them, they hit you on the head with 60 pounds of stuff, it's over. As cray as that sounds, you need transparency through that wall. Close quotes, said the president. So I just thought I would share that with you here on WGN Radio.
Is that what he said in what was the off-the-record conversation on the flight over to France?
Yeah, maybe that was where it was. I only have that, and I don't know the full context of it, except that a lot of people are reposting that today.
But you're sure it's real?
Yeah.
Okay.
If anybody knows otherwise, 312-981-7200. I've seen it in two places. One of them was Eric Zorn's Facebook page. As much as Eric doesn't like the president, he's usually pretty good about his reporting.
Right.
I think that's for real.
Well, I read that this off-the-record Air Force One, you know, chit-chat that he had with reporters, it was off the record. And then he was apparently upset that no one was reporting on it. And so that's why the White House ended up releasing some transcripts of what he said. So I think that might be what that is.
Okay, but Cray? First of all, isn't it cray-cray, or do you say cray? I've never been good at that one.
Is that what jumps out at you? Not getting hit on the head with a bag of drugs?
Hold on. Let me see if he's tweeted about this. You know, we follow the president's Twitter account here on WGN Radio, and I'll just... See if he's tweeted anything along these lines. That was the thing. This reads more like a tweet, but it's a little long and it's a little rambling. One of the things with the wall is you need transparency. You have to be able to see through it. In other words, if you can see through that wall, so it could be a steel wall with openings. He's actually imagining this wall. You have to have openings because you got to see what's on the other side of the wall. Point. And I'll give you an example. As horrible as it sounds, when they throw large sacks of drugs over the wall, if you have people on the other side of the wall and you don't see them, they hit you on the head with 60 pounds of stuff. It's over. As cray as that sounds, you need transparency through that wall. It reminds me of the congressman that was asking the man in charge of the U.S. Naval Forces, if everybody stood on one side of an island, would it tip over? Do you remember that sort of incredulous response that the admiral gave? Oh, don't worry, I'll find it. We'll play it, and you'll like it. It's 1:20. First, Andy Field from ABC gives us the latest on Donnygate.
Good morning, sir. A pleasant good morning to you, sir.
Good morning.
Please permit me to apologize for this unusual disturbance, but we're hoping for some conversations, please.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about, the conversation that did or did not take place. What was revealed in that Donald Trump Jr. meeting with now two Russians and What more should we know about that? We reached out to Andy Field from ABC News to talk about that. Andy, it's John. You're on WGN Radio in Chicago. How are you?
Good, John. You know, the room keeps getting more and more crowded with each new report. At first, it was a meeting with someone who was a lobbyist who wanted to talk about Russian adoption, but in fact, really what they wanted to talk about was getting rid of a law that prohibited certain Russians from coming here in the United States, and that was really the beginning of all the Russian sanctions. That is what Donald Trump Jr. told us last Saturday. The story has changed several times as the New York Times put out new information saying they had copies of emails to show that indeed the reason they took this meeting was because this woman was going to offer dirt on Hillary Clinton. And the email specifically to Donald Trump Jr. said it is coming from the Russian government and they want to help you win and Hillary Clinton lose. So, of course, as this has morphed over the week, Donald Trump Jr. went on Fox News and said, this is it. You know everything you need to know about it. And then today we find out that, yes, there is indeed another person at this meeting who was a former Russian intelligence officer in Afghanistan. So yeah. The plot thickens.
Andy, I just played back that clip where Sean Hannity asked Donald Jr. that question. And, you know, really it was in response to, are there any more emails? So Hannity was pressing him on any emails, and then Donald Trump sort of expanded it, Jr. did, when he said, no, that's it, that's everything, we want to be transparent. They're offering it, drip, drip, drip. I said, let's put it all out there. But I don't recall Hannity or anybody else getting the opportunity to ask Donald Jr., was anybody else in the meeting? He didn't volunteer that, but I wonder, had anybody specifically asked him that question?
I don't know the answer to that question. Certainly, no one other than Fox has been allowed to talk to Donald Trump Jr. So in terms of transparency, when you have the House organ for the Trump administration that is basically cheerleading the president and not really asking him tough questions, it's kind of hard to do that. In terms of who was in the audience, I'm sorry, not the audience,
the room.
The thing here, the room. There's some more interesting information here. It says, so far, acknowledged in attendance was Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, the son-in-law, Paul Manafort, who was the campaign manager, Veselitskaya, the woman, and now this guy, Arkmetshin. And then, of course, publicist Rob Goldstone, and there was a translator. So it was a pretty crowded room. But what's interesting is that Senator Chuck Grassley, who is a Republican, had written a letter to John Kelly, the Secretary of Homeland Security, this spring, asking about this guy, Ashmetshin. I'm going to have to take a Russian class before this is all over.
We all are. I used to think we need to know Chinese or Urdu, but now it's Russian again.
We have to practice all these names. And so Chuck Grassley asked about him. He's a Russian immigrant to the United States who's been accused of acting as an unregistered agent for Russian interests. And Grassley wanted information about him. Now, remember, Grassley didn't know about this meeting at the time. This just came up because Grassley's on an oversight committee and he wanted to know about these things. So the final word we've had on this so far was from President Trump yesterday at a news conference where he didn't think there was anything wrong with the meeting. It was, as he said, you know, I think the quote from the president was, you know, I think they talked about adoption and some other things, kind of blowing away the some other things part, which was the actual reason for the meeting in the first place.
And the president says that he did not know about this meeting and was not briefed on it afterwards. He only found out about it when the rest of us did.
That is what the president says, but there have been a lot of statements made this week that have been corrected and updated. And by the way, Jared Kushner has, we're told, updated his foreign contacts list that he's supposed to have for his security clearance and apparently has added 100 other meetings that he neglected to mention.
I want to take a quick phone call here. We've got lots of phone lines ringing, but we only have a minute. Andy Field is on the line from ABC News, and we're obviously talking about, by the way, does this rise to gate status? Donnie Gate is so easy.
Yeah, no one's added a gate to this yet.
Or,
you know, and the important thing here is that it's not clear that they did anything illegal. There doesn't seem to be any law broken, but what's interesting is that we have heard denial after denial after denial that there was any connection between the Trump campaign, anyone close to Donald Trump, and the Russians. And we have, from Donald Jr., a release of emails that show that is not correct.
Ron, you had a question. You're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
No, I just wanted to say in regards to your query about who else, was there a question about who else is in the meeting? The president, several days ago in Paris, was very clear when he said his son, his wonderful son, took a meeting from a Russian attorney. Now, I would imagine if the president knew there were other people there, or his son knew, he would have confided to his father that indeed there was somebody else. But the president himself said that his son took a meeting with an attorney, period. And there was no mention of anybody else.
Interesting point. Thanks for the phone call. Yeah, so if the president is using the singular, then maybe his expectation was there was only that one Russian woman. All right.
All of this is interesting to talk about at this point, but the gentleman, the special counsel who is looking into this now, has now expanded the investigation into, and I'm certain that he will subpoena emails and servers and the like to find out exactly what else has happened.
Mary, you had a comment? What was that? You're on WGN. Hi,
yeah,
Mary.
I was saying that this is like the Hamilton song, Who Was in the Room When It Happened?
Yeah, that's right. You know, I've been looking for appropriate themes.
Could be a musical.
Yeah, I don't want to go to that one. Mary, thank you for the call. Andy, thanks for your time. Let's visit again next week maybe, huh?
All right, thank you so much.
Our top story. You do that last one and I'll introduce you. And then if you just came from another planet, you'll know there's no intelligent sign of life down here. Our top story.
Trump admits border wall could be defeated by medieval siege technique.
Martians are getting back. They're going back up the ramp.
Don't bother.
There they go. Our last call before the break. Thank you, C. Bertrand said, you know, this sounds like a scene. Who was in the room? Now there's another guy in the room. Who was the determinant of that? What was said? It sounds like they're remaking Hamilton to be Trump the musical.
Well, I arranged the meeting. I arranged the menu, the venue, the seating.
But no one else was in the room where it happened. The room where it happened. The room where it happened. No one else was in the room where it happened. How the party gets, yes. The pieces that are sacrificed in every game of chess. We just assume that it happens. But no one else is in the room where it happened.
Oh, huh. Oh, huh. But nobody asked. You have the soundbite from Sean Hannity at the beginning of the interview he did with Donald Trump Jr., who's now going by the meme Fredo. So here's Donald Trump Jr. sitting down with Sean Hannity, and Hannity does a little monologue, puts it in his perspective, don't we all? And then he prefaces the interview with this.
We will ask him every single question I can think of on this topic.
He did not ask who was in the room. Was there anybody else in the room? He didn't ask if there was another former Russian spy in the room at the time. Maybe you wouldn't have thought to ask that, although it could have come up. But you could have said, okay, cool, and there was nobody else in the room either? Any other sources of email? Sean, you had the golden ticket. Nobody else, not in the lamestream media, is going to get a chance to sit down with the president's son. You had the only chance to ask that question, and you did not. It's 1:39. Markets are doing good. We got that going for us. In fact, it's a fact. If with every unsettling revelation, the market wobbled, the market would currently be at about $1.73. When President-elect Trump became president, or when candidate Trump became President-elect Trump, I thought the market was going to fall off. And you remember what it did election night. And since then, I thought that his either rookie mistakes or his inattention or his strange tweets were going to sink us, that the market would say this isn't a stable person, and therefore we don't have much confidence in the U.S. economy. And nothing could be further from the truth. The market is buying the president time. This is not going to be a conversation anymore about Donald Trump. But just think about that. If the markets were reacting to the unsteadiness in Washington, and often they do, then I think we'd be anxious to get this president and all of them out of there. But we're not. And we're not because of the markets. Matt Egan has a headline in his story today. Trump rally being kept alive by mega profits. Will that continue? Matt joins us now on WGN Radio. Matt, thanks for picking up the phone. How are you this afternoon?
I'm doing pretty well. Thank you for asking. Thanks for having me on. And like you said, it's a great time for the market right now. Dow was up 80 points. And if it closes up today, it would be the 25th record so far this year alone.
Why?
Why is it up today? Probably
lately?
Not.
I mean, since pick a date. Pick January 1st. Pick January 22nd. Pick the Trump presidency. Why is the market doing so well in the first half?
Well, it's clear that the initial enthusiasm after the election was about the Trump agenda, that investors were fired up about the idea of especially massive tax cuts for corporations, because that would lead to higher profits. Of course, you know, as we know, tax reform remains very uncertain at this point. The entire Trump agenda has not been enacted yet. You see the market still up, and that's largely because corporate profits are doing well anyway, and the U.S. economy continues to be pretty healthy, and interest rates are still very low. So instead of focusing on all the drama in D.C., Wall Street is paying a little more attention to the fundamentals, which admittedly look pretty solid right now.
So does that mean that we're immune to what happens with the health care bill or the tax bill? Say they don't get it passed, or they don't get it passed the way Wall Street likes? Will the market stay where it is?
It's a great question. We have seen in the past dips from the market when the Obamacare repeal efforts stalled and failed. The other way to spin it, though, if you talk to some of the more optimistic analysts on Wall Street, they would say the market might even react positively if the health care repeal efforts fail, because it might force the administration and Congress to get something done and get something done quickly on tax reform, which at the end of the day is what investors really care the most about right now.
What sectors are driving the economy? Economy and markets, I know, are not synonymous, but we're talking about the markets. What's driving them?
Look, I mean, the Dow is having a great year so far. It's up about 9%. Believe it or not, it's up, I think, 3,300 points just since the election. But the NASDAQ is up so much more. I mean, you're seeing the NASDAQ up 17% this year because tech stocks continue to perform really, really well. We're looking for more tech numbers to come out as far as earnings go next week from Netflix and Microsoft and a few others. So it's clear that tech is continuing to lead the way.
Hmm. What about housing? What about the automotive sector? Are they vulnerable, housing particularly?
You know, you never know. I think that the thing that people are paying the most attention to is interest rates right now. Obviously, mortgage rates remain extremely low from a historical standpoint, but rates have come up a little bit recently, and some people would wonder whether or not housing could slow down a bit if borrowing costs were to rise.
Well, interest rates are going to go up a little bit here, a little bit there, but the market seems to have weathered that, right?
Sure, sure. You know, the interesting thing as far as, you know, sectors that are doing really well, President Trump has made a really concerted push to talk about not just helping the energy industry and not just energy independence, but pushing for American energy dominance. And yet, when you look at how those stocks have performed, the energy sector is the second worst performer so far this year. Energy stocks are down 13%. Big names like Exxon and Chevron have struggled, and that continues to be because oil prices remain low, and there continues to be a really, really big oversupply problem there. The agreements to dial back on production by Russia and OPEC have failed to fix the supply glut so far.
How do you describe the U.S. economy?
I think that it's safe to say that the U.S. economy continues to hum along.
It's not growing fast enough. That's been the criticism, right?
It's a fair criticism. I mean, the recovery from the Great Recession has not been nearly as robust as many would have hoped for. And President Trump set extremely ambitious goals of at least 3%, if not 4% growth. The problem, though, is that the American economy is, you know, it's driven by consumer spending. It's about 2/3 of it is made up of consumer spending, and consumers aren't spending more right now. I mean, new numbers were out this morning on retail sales for June. Sales were down for a second straight month. And consumer sentiment has also taken a step back from a new survey from University of Michigan back to actually pre-election levels. So, you know, you're not going to see the economy grow all that much faster until you see consumer spending increase.
Well, maybe people will spend more when they start to make more. I mean, you know, unemployment has been, it's a good number these days, even though it ticked up a little bit. But that was because more people were looking. But the point is, they're not making enough money with those jobs. When are we going to get people paid more?
You're right. I mean, wage growth has been extremely disappointing. And you listen to the Federal Reserve talk about how they think that, you know, inflation will get to the desired levels and that wage growth will come. But it hasn't happened yet. There continues to be debate over whether or not the jobs market is at full employment at this point. The thinking is that once it gets there or near there, you know, there will be a shortage of talent, and employers will be forced to pay up for workers, but either to keep them or to attract new ones. But it hasn't happened yet, and no one knows for sure when or if it will.
What do you think about this? Say Trump gets impeached or just quits in a huff, which neither of those are likely, but I could almost see this guy saying, fine, and he picks up his marbles and he goes home. Whatever. If for some reason Donald Trump isn't the president of the United States and Mike Pence is, it's still a Republican and it's still a Republican Congress. And I've been thinking all along that all of this is because the Main Street and Wall Street think that their best interests are being protected with Republicans in office. So it's not really Donald Trump. He can take all the credit he wants, but we don't lose much if he's no longer in the big seat. Do you agree with that, or do you think I'm missing something there?
Well, the one thing that I would say you might be missing is the notion about Wall Street doing better under a Republican, because when you actually look back in history, the stock market has had a better performance under Democratic presidents than Republican presidents for whatever reason. But to your point about the current administration, I was at the Salt Hedge Fund Conference in Las Vegas in May, and at the time, people were talking about that very topic, about, you know, how long President Trump would be in office. And there were a number of people who admitted, a number of hedge fund managers and you know, market participants who were talking about the fact that they wouldn't mind if it were, you know, Pence at the top of the ticket instead of or in charge instead.
Yeah.
Because you get the same, perhaps a similar agenda, but some of the risks, such as on trade policy and
yeah,
protectionism, and just the general unpredictability that investors don't like, might not be there. So, I mean, that has been talked about. Of course, that would miss the fact that, you know, a sudden change at the top, and it might also include some, you know, a prolonged period of instability in you know, in Congress. So it's hard to imagine that, you know, during a time of turmoil, they'd be able to get much of that agenda done anyway, though.
I'm looking for the Jamie Dimon quote. You may have seen that today. Jamie Dimon said that it's embarrassing to be an American. Here's one of our top business leaders. And Steve Bertrand sent me this article just maybe in preparation for his own business hour. But he said as much, and it just sort of fortifies my point, I think, that if Donald Trump wants to take credit for this, that's fine. I don't know. I don't care who gets credit for it. I just know that I have a 401k and it's doing better now. In fact, it makes me wonder, if Hillary Clinton were president, do you think the markets would be where they are right now?
No one knows. I And, you know, the market went up heading into the election and seemed to respond positively to positive news for Hillary Clinton. And as you mentioned in the open, the market then tanked in the overnight markets when it became clear that Hillary Clinton was not going to win outright. And yet all of that fear disappeared by the morning, and the market started positively that first day after the election, and for the most part has gone up since then. So it's hard to say for sure. And there was a certain amount of optimism among investors, small business owners, and consumers triggered by the election, either the fact that it was over or more likely some of the policies and policy changes that were being announced. Some of that optimism, though, has either begun to fade or has already completely faded. So at this point, you know, the market seems to be responding a little bit more to the fundamentals rather than all of the headlines out of Washington.
This is the Jamie Dimon headline. It's in the USA Today. I'm reading Money Watch. What am I looking at here? Almost an embarrassment being an American. J.P. Morgan Chase CEO Jamie Dimon lashed out at U.S. government policy during the company's quarterly earnings conference. It's almost an embarrassment being an American citizen and listening to the stupid bleep we have to deal with in this country, Dimon said. He was answering a question from UBS analyst Saul Martinez about whether political gridlock seemed likely to stunt the nation's economic growth. The CEO, regarded by many as the country's foremost banking executive, took it as a chance to deride U.S. policies, which he said are hindering faster expansion. I was just in France, Argentina, Israel, Ireland. We met with the Prime Minister of India and China, Dimon said. It's amazing to me that every single one of these countries understands the practical policies that promote business and growth are good for the average citizens of this country, for jobs and wages, and that somehow this great American free enterprise system, we no longer get it. Well, maybe that's not directed at the president per se, but he said it's an embarrassment being an American, Steve.
I actually have this in my 2 o'clock newscast, and I think he said at one point it's not a Republican or Democratic issue. It's kind of the malaise of all of them. But anyway, here's what it sounded like.
We have become one of the most bureaucratic, confusing, litigious societies on the planet. It's almost an embarrassment being an American citizen traveling around the world and listening to the stupid we have to deal with in this country.
Well, pardon me, I was casting that as his commentary on the administration. I don't know that that's fair.
I'll look at it deeper, but I don't know that it is. No.
Yeah, I think you're right. Interesting. And interesting to talk to you. Hey, Matt, listen, we are out of time. Any last comments from you before I let you go?
That's, you know, I think that next time they should not schedule the Jamie Dimon earnings conference call on a Friday morning in the summer. He might be in a better mood next time.
Yeah, really? Something's up. See, he's got a burr there, doesn't he? Let's talk again. Thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Matt Egan, CNN Money, senior writer.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Got one right here.
Here's John Williams.
Watch this, 207. Mm-hmm. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. This is John, 1 hour down, another hour to go.
Lord have mercy.
Why do they work me so hard? Denver O'Connor and Anna DeVlantis, they'll say hi in a little bit. About a half hour from right now, the bright side. You'll call in and tell us why you're smiling. What's the good news in your world? We do that on Fridays to start the weekend before Ro and Anna stroll in and so I want you to be listening to The Bright Side and call in or text in what's your good news. We'll do that around 2:40. By the way, you could text right now. What is the most, Steve, interesting fact about Illinois? If you live in Wisconsin or Indiana, wherever you live, you could text that in too. What is the most interesting factoid about Illinois? Quick. Or Chicago? Quick. What do you know? What's people go, wow, that's a very interesting thing about your state, Steve. How about this one? The Chicago River flows
backwards?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a cool one.
Yeah.
It comes to mind.
Yeah, that's a good little fun fact to have.
Or there could be something about the fact that much of the city was once lake water. Everything east of Lake Michigan, Michigan Avenue is, and that's a lot now, used to be lake.
That's coming back, I think.
Yeah, I know. The Cubs never won a World. They don't have that one anymore.
I was trying to think of something like touching the Mason-Dixon line, but, you know, the length of it.
Illinois touches the Mason-Dixon line?
I don't know. It's down there.
That'd be a good one if it did.
It's nearly Confederate territory.
Here's the one that they have. Until 1969, the official language of Illinois was technically American, as opposed to English. This was set into law in 1923 when Representative Washington J. McCormick, hello, McCormick, was trying to make America the country's official language, or American. Even though it failed as a bill on the national level, he was able to convince the congressmen of this state to make the change.
It's not even really a language, right? There is no language.
I don't know what American is. Bad English. I think that's a good one. Now, that's a good one. But then you say, okay, California, what a fascinating, great state with a rich, bizarre history. What do they have about that? And they have this. Fortune cookies were invented there. That's somebody at MSN not trying. That's not trying.
Right. That was like 43 on their list.
I know. They say, hey, well, I need that list. Okay. Fortune cookies. Iowa, roughly 7 times more pigs live in the state than people. All right. Come on, Iowa. You can do better than that. I need a cooler fact about Illinois, or we'll just do Chicago. Text them to 312-981-7200. We will review the list in a little bit. Clay Jenkinson is on line 7, noted scholar. I don't know, maybe Clay's got an observation for us. Hi, Clay. How are you?
Hey, I have 3. Number 1.
Got it.
Illinois was named by Thomas Jefferson.
Okay, wait a minute. I did not know that. Woohoo! That's awesome. Okay, number 2.
In the 1784 land ordinance, Jefferson named a number of future western states, and one of them was Illinois, which is more or less identical in shape to the current Illinois. Number 2, Theodore Roosevelt gave 2 nomination speeches, 2 presidential speeches in the same town in 1912. He failed to win the nomination in the Republican National Convention, even though he had won all but one of the primaries. And the second one was across town, the Bull Moose Party, where he gave his famous "We Stand at Armageddon and We Battle for the Lord." And after he was nearly assassinated in Milwaukee, he briefly convalesced in Chicago. So there's a huge Theodore Roosevelt connection in Chicago.
Digging
and
that.
Third, in the 1893 Chicago Exposition, the famous White City Exposition, Buffalo Bill Cody brought his Wild West to the place, but he wasn't part of the official events. He set up across the road, and he was dramatically more popular and visited than the official exposition. You can't buy this kind of historical genius, man. Just think of that. I'm sitting here on hold thinking it's going to be the weather, or, you know, the I-90 is all congested, and there. How about that? Illinois was named by the 3rd president of the United States.
TJ, we call him. So I asked Clay Jenkinson to come on. You may vaguely recognize that voice because... And we've never had a conversation like this before, but I thought it would be kind of fun to visit with the man behind President Jefferson and President Roosevelt, the stage shows that we do once a year. Our August 12th show for you is virtually sold out. I told we're in double digits, less than 100 seats left for the 1 o'clock show, and we're nearing that for the 10 a.m. show. Which of the so if you don't know what I'm talking about, every half year, a year or so, I go on stage, often at the College of DuPage, and I visit with in first person one of these 2 presidents, Jefferson or Roosevelt. The August 12th show at the College of DuPage will be with President Roosevelt. And on comes this guy. You believe that's President Roosevelt. I talk to him for about 45 minutes, and then we take questions from the crowd. We do the same sort of show with Thomas Jefferson. You portray both. Which do you prefer?
Well, first let me say that I play those historic presidents. You play King John. And Jefferson would not like the idea of king anything.
Yeah.
And Roosevelt would say, if you're going to be a king, you got to have a lot more oomph than that. You got to be able to punch a guy out in a bar from time to time. I prefer Jefferson because I think you and I both do. Jefferson is a visionary. He is essentially the crafter of the American dream, our belief in the aspirational, that humans are designed for happiness and rights, comes largely from Jefferson. He's a calm and intelligent and thoughtful commentator on the world. I think we both, even you, I think, are a secret Jeffersonian. Roosevelt, poor John Williams just gets shouldered off the stage, and you're just standing around looking at this massive ego. He's Trump with a brain, if that makes any sense.
Well, it really, we say what you will about Donald Trump, we never really have had as storied a president as Teddy Roosevelt, right? I mean, each time you and I walk off the stage after having done a Roosevelt show, I think, oh, darn, we didn't even do his trip to South America or his safaris or San Juan Hill, you know?
Here's why he was so great, John. First of all, he said what he meant, and he meant what he said. We haven't had that for a while, and especially now. But also, he was a national hero. He was our first cowboy president. He had had a transformation out in the Badlands of my home state, North Dakota, and he'd been transformed from a kind of New York snob and an aristocrat into somebody who really did know how to bond with the people of this country. And he was a war hero from his time at San Juan Hill in Cuba. And so he had this personal allure that he was legendary. He was a mythological, larger-than-life human being. And because of that, it helped him achieve his agenda. His agenda turned out to be a fairly radical and progressive agenda, and it wouldn't have passed if it had been in the hands of McKinley or Taft or even Woodrow Wilson. But because Roosevelt was such a, as you see him on stage, such a massive personality and so delightful, even when you're kind of appalled, delightful, that he was able to do that. But when I finished doing Roosevelt, I'm sweating like a hog. Like
you are.
From Iowa. I'm just sweating. And then I always look over at you, and I feel so sad because 99.99% of the people come to see the great, famous John Williams, and then John Williams has to stand on the stage and watch himself be bullied and belittled and kicked around like a 98-pound weakling by this giant ego from the past. I always feel guilty.
You go right ahead and feel guilty about it then, because I think it plays true to how that would go if I had Roosevelt on the stage. I think that's what it would be like. And when tell me if this story is true. I only vaguely recollect it. But after he's president, he goes on safari in Africa or to tour Europe or something, and then he comes back. He's coming back to the United States. And just to remind us that a president or a former president can still be wildly popular, and we really just don't have that much anymore. When he comes back, that like schools let out, and there were thousands and zillions of people, right? Do you know the story I'm talking about?
Yes, he comes back in 1910. He's been gone now for almost 2 years. And first it was the largest ticker tape parade in the history of New York up until the present day. I mean, the country went nuts for the return of its most famous person, its greatest person, certainly in that era. And when his ship came into New York Harbor, little dinghies and rowboats and small boats and tugboats and any watercraft that people could get went out to greet him. And he was treated like a king plus. He was treated like a combination of the most popular American plus the most famous American plus the greatest American. And the adulation was unprecedented in all of American history. And he could scarcely move. And poor Edith, his wife, you know, said, hey, here we are, your family. You've been gone for a while. Can we have a little attention here? And he couldn't give them attention because the public owned him in a way that I don't think has ever been equaled in the whole course of American history, not even with modern media and modern transport systems. And so, you know, that was the problem, John, because he was the biggest personality in the history of the presidency. He left at the age of 50, and for the next 10 years, he only lived to be 60, but for the next 10 years, he became one of the most annoying people who ever lived because he couldn't stand not to be in power. He could not stand to be a former president. You know, Bill Clinton has a hard time being a former president, George W. Bush not so much. Roosevelt, every single day was agony to him to think that somebody else could be allowed to do the thing that he should be doing.
And he was great with a quip and great with a four-hour speech. I wonder what he would have done on Twitter. I'll bet he would have. I wonder if he would have resisted it. Would that have seemed too trivial to him, or would he have just been awesome at it because he loved to talk and touch people? You know.
Well, I think he would have been able to do it. You know, speak softly and carry a big stick. You will go far. And Black Care seldom sits behind a rider whose pace is fast enough. And you know. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred with dust and sweat and blood. You can take Jefferson, who is a very tight, brief prose stylist, or Roosevelt, who's a prosaic, a prolific, a verbose prose stylist. But either one said so many memorable things that they could easily have Twitter accounts. They probably both would be ashamed of an America that had been reduced to discourse in 144 characters, especially Jefferson. But they both would master it. And that's, I guess, one of my points as a humanities scholar, John. Genius outs. Someone like Jefferson is going to be at the top of the heap in any era. He's going to master whatever the situation is. You know, Roosevelt once in Osawatomie, Kansas, on August 31st, 1910, gave the most radical speech ever by a major political figure in the United States. There were 20,000 people there. No amplification of any sort. He stood up on a table and bellowed for a couple of hours, and they heard him. And you can't imagine Jefferson doing that, but somehow he would find a way.
Wow. It's 219 on WGN. That's the voice of Clay Jenkinson. When he does Jefferson, he performs with a softer, more retiring voice and persona. And when he does Roosevelt, give me just 3 seconds. Give me 4 or 5 seconds of Roosevelt.
I believe that this country has a destiny in the world, and if we fail to meet that destiny, we will be the most shameful and pitiful beings who ever walked on the face of the earth. Our need is to master the world because the Anglo-Saxon races deserve to lead because nobody else can do it as well as we can. And by the way, I need to be at the front of that army.
So then there's that.
I'm tired. No, I'm sweating. You know, Jefferson would say, it is to be considered as a principle that may be useful in the course of human events, that sometimes a stronger leader may be more important than a weaker one. And it's always interesting, but it's not like the big stick.
Well, Roosevelt gets more laughs. I think Jefferson fires more thoughts for the crowd as
laughs.
They watch.
You know, people come. I mean, I'm not joking, John. People come. We do these lines afterwards where we autograph programs and photographs, and the line is like 3.5 miles long, and they come up and they shoulder me out of the way and say, John, did you get the packet of things I sent you about tax relief?
I like when, so there we are, we're always signing programs or pictures or copies of books that you've written, and I sign it John Williams, or maybe King John for fun, and then you sign it Clay Jenkinson. I think, oh, that's disappointing, because they came to see Roosevelt. They want Roosevelt, and here's C-L-A-Y.
They come up and they say to me, hey, good show, nice costume. Now, John, your glasses, I think that they were black the last time I saw you, but your new sweater, man, that sweater works for you, especially on radio, honey.
All right, so if you want to see what we're talking about, and I know you do, you may not be able to get tickets.
These things.
To the 10 o'clock show, the 1 o'clock show. No, the 1 o'clock show is nearly sold out, but you might be able to get into the 10. Call 630-942-4000. Bring a friend, 630-942-4000. That's the Mac box office at the College of DuPage. Or go to WGNradio.com/events, and you will see this man there. This conversation you and I have just now had and are now concluding of 9 minutes is longer than I almost ever talk to you. I almost am always talking to one of those two presidents, backstage, afterwards, on stage. It's nice to hear.
Very interesting. I'm just me. I don't even know who my identity is, but I know who they are. And if people want to come to this, you know, people come 6, 7, 10 times, 10 years in
a
row, as
you
know,
true.
John. The programs are always different. It's always thrilling. They get to see a bona fide national hero and me.
And they get to hear it in their words. I've never seen you fumble for a phrase. You must have just committed a lot of this to memory, and when the question or occasion serves, then you just call it up, huh?
Yeah, I come out there, and I just like performing at the top of my energy level for 2 hours or whatever, and then you drop me off at my Motel 6, and I sit in the chair and quiver for 7 or 8 hours.
That's kind of true. All right, my friend. I'll see you.
I love you. I can't wait to see you. It's only a few weeks.
Second Saturday in August. Get tickets and learn, laugh, and live with Teddy Roosevelt. I'll talk to you again.
Jefferson named Illinois. Talk to you soon.
3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Wasting away again in Margaritaville.
I'll be singing this from my rooftop this weekend too, Steve.
Searching for my lost sugar song.
has to do this song, right? I mean, he's got to do this song.
Some people claim
that. Does he open with this? Just get it out of the way. I'm tired of playing this damn song. Let's just go ahead and do it. Or does he save it for the end?
Well, I guess you'll be one of the first to find out who didn't pay.
Don't know the reason.
Little known facts about Illinois. John, Illinois had two other state capitals. Oh, two other state capitals before Springfield.
I think I know them.
Go.
Kaskaskia.
Yeah.
And Vidalia. No, that's an onion. is it a V?
Yeah.
Valdosta?
Nope,
no, that's
Georgia.
In Georgia.
Vandalia.
Man, I was close.
You were the first time. And there is a fire-breathing dragon in Vandalia known as the Kaskaskia Dragon. John, no mention of Cahokia Mounds. Cahokia Mounds are awesome. They're mounds, and they're in Cahokia. This one says, hey, John, if it wasn't for Nathaniel Pope, we'd be technically living in Wisconsin right now. The original north border started at the southernmost point of Lake Michigan going west to the Mississippi River. We would be part of Wisconsin if it was the original map. Jefferson named us Illinois. The Chicago River flows backwards. All of these better than... Actually, I think the factoid about Illinois that until 1923 our official state language was American is pretty cool. John, Chicago means... Hey, Steve, do you know what the definition of Chicago is?
Wild onions.
Smelly onions is correct. Santa Anna's leg is in Springfield. I didn't know that. These are better. These are good. Until Prohibition, Illinois was the number one wine-producing state in the Union. Wow, we never got that back.
And we're all better for it, I think.
Yeah, I've tried some of the Illinois wines, and God bless you, but California stuff is better. The building across the river from the NBC building was designed to look like a champagne bottle in protest of Prohibition. The NBC building? Well, that's right over there.
That can't be.
I'm not sure which building they're talking
about. Those are all new buildings.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Hi, John. Don from Gardner. Illinois factoid. One of the richest fossil beds in the world is along the Mazan River, 60 miles west of Chicago, the farm I grew up on.
I know people who go fossil hunting there.
Say that again, Steve?
I know people who've gone fossil hunting
there. I have. Yeah. I found, trilobites, a little kind of thing. Mm. Have you done that? Did you find some cool
fossils?
I've
not, but you know, where I grew up, we used to find arrowheads every once in a while.
Yeah.
I found arrowheads before.
Those aren't fossils, though.
No. They're better.
Ella, fun Illinois fact?
Didn't you go to Joliet Junior College?
I did.
That's
not
a fact.
A listener says Joliet Junior. Yeah, Steve. Joliet Junior College is the nation's first junior college.
Yes, it is our oldest junior college. And one of the oldest colleges in the country. Go Wolves. I was the field goal kicker for the Joliet Junior College Wolves one year.
Did you always kick them forward?
Let's go to Jim on line one. Hey, Jim, your fun Illinois fact is?
Oh, hey, I'm from your backyard down in Shanahan.
How about that?
Yeah, a big listener. Listen to you every day.
Thank you, sir.
Little known fact, probably could be corrected if I'm wrong, but my geography lessons tell me that the Kankakee River is the only river in the United States that flows north to the Mississippi.
How about that? I like that. The Kankakee River, only river that flows north to the Mississippi. Ding, 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 ding.
I think it flows from Indiana through eastern Illinois, and it terminates in the Illinois River right at Shanahan, which means where the rivers meet. The DuPage, Illinois River, and the Des Plaines all meet right here. I'm looking right at it.
Shanahan means where the rivers meet?
It's Potawatomi Indian for the word where the rivers meet.
Very nice. Very nice.
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, that's really cool. I know.
Back.
Shanahan's a suburb of Manuka, and I was the French club president at Manuka High School years ago. So I'm due for a return.
Yeah, we share the same McDonald's and Walgreens.
Jim, thanks for the call.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
What, smart boy?
Nothing. Nothing. Why would you say that?
And finally, Vicky. Hey, Vicky, you're on WGN, your fun Illinois factoid.
Okay. Hi. Love your show.
Thank you.
I grew up in Champaign-Urbana, where the University of Illinois is, and they have agricultural experimental plots that have continuous corn growing for over 100 years. And when they went to expand their undergraduate library, somebody pointed out that the sun would no longer be able to shine on the plots, and it would ruin 100 years of experimenting. So they built the entire library underground.
I knew it was an underground library. I didn't know why. To save the crops?
To save the crops and the experimental plots. They're
How
called
about
Navarro
that?
Plots. Isn't that the coolest thing?
I love that factoid.
What's the budget deficit?
I don't know.
What does that have to do with the price of tea in China?
Well, that's a lot of money, I'm sure, right?
Oh, yeah, but back then we had it. Back then, I mean, the Illinois Library goes back, 30 years, something like that?
Oh, longer than that, because it was longer than that when I was in high school.
Yeah.
Back there.
Very good.
They had the third largest in the country, but it was still in need of expansion. So they expanded it, and you can walk across and look down at the lower level, you know, little sort of pavilions underground. It's amazing.
And it is. It is. No, the University of Illinois Library is one of the great things about that great school. That's for sure. Caravan Palace. Town this weekend. House of Blues tomorrow night, 8:00. Tickets still available. Fridays, before we do the bright side, we like to highlight a couple things you might want to be doing this weekend in Chicago. Navy Pier is celebrating its 101st birthday. The Radio Flyer Wagon celebrated 100 years yesterday, and Navy Pier 101 years, celebrating that tomorrow. And then they'll do some stuff on Sunday, too. In fact, they've got a full day tomorrow and Sunday of activities. They'll start at 11 in the morning with Native American drums and dance performances at 11 a.m. at Navy Pier. And it goes through a bunch of jazz and other types of musical performances. They close tomorrow night with the Aeon Summer Fireworks Show at 10:15. Then Chicago's Latin Jazz Festival is Sunday the 16th. Yeah, that's this Sunday. Where did the summer go? Sunday the 16th. The Latin Jazz Collaborative tribute to Dizzy Gillespie's at Navy Pier, and that goes through the afternoon. All the details are at NavyPier.com. That's tomorrow and Sunday. Caravan Palace is at the House of Blues. Jimmy Buffett is tomorrow. Jimmy Buffett and the Coral Reefer Band are at Wrigley Field at 7 o'clock. Pitchfork's back in town. They're doing that this weekend. I don't know if you can still get tickets to that. Do you think you can? Pitchfork.com/festival/Chicago, pitchfork.com, $75 for single-day tickets. Solange is in town, Tribe Called Quest, PJ Harvey, and others. And then the 42nd annual LaGrange Craft Fair, just steps from LaGrange Road Metro stop in downtown LaGrange. 200 booths near all of the fun restaurants. It's easy to get to. They'll do this tomorrow from 9 to 6 and Sunday from 10 to 5. And I've heard some terrific music at the LaGrange Craft Fair, too. And then, you know, outdoor food and booze. I don't think that's a bad stop for you tomorrow. The 42nd year they're doing it in LaGrange. A couple of other fun facts about states nearby. Oh, yes, John, this has been a hit today. Could we hear more? MSN had the list today. It says the strangest facts about every state. Colorado, after the continuous theft of Colorado's mile marker 420, the state now has the mile marker sign reading mile marker 419.99. Hawaiians eat more spam than any other state in the union. We know that. Some of these are kind of fun. I think that one is. But poor Kansas. In the history of that great state, all they came up with was Pizza Hut franchise was born in Kansas. Too bad for you, Kansas. Maine, here's all you got. Until 2003, Maine's town of Strong was the toothpick capital of the world. Strong created 90% of our country's toothpick supply. However, all factories have since closed down, and the town no longer makes any toothpicks. So the most interesting thing they found about Maine was that it doesn't make toothpicks anymore.
That is closed.
Minnesota, most golfers per capita, any state in the union.
Wow,
Minnesota.
That surprises me. That's shocking. It is shocking.
Kool-Aid, official beverage of Nebraska.
Okay, that's shocking.
Ohio, due to the high levels of chemical pollution, the Cuyahoga River once caught fire. In fact, it did 13 times. Now, this one's good. Pennsylvania, in the town of Centralia, a coal mine fire has been burning for 50 years underground. Due to the fire, which has been burning through the town all these years, Centralia has lost the majority of its residents. There's now 7 people. And maybe they don't know, but their town is on fire underground. And finally, Texas, you'll find the highest posted speed limit in the country when you drive through Texas from San Antonio to Georgetown. You know what the highest posted speed limit is you can legally drive? I thought it was in Montana. It's not. It's in Texas. What would you guess, Steve? Highest legal speed limit in the country. The correct answer is 85 miles an hour. 85 miles an hour. Legally posted parts of Texas. Okay, let's do the bright side. It's 244. I need you to call 312-981-7200 or text to 312-981-7200 right now. Here we go.
Some things in life are bad.
This is what we do.
They can really make you mad.
This is what we need to do.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
I have an open phone line.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
And text line.
Grumble, give a whistle.
Get ready.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
Sing at home if you know the words. Always.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Okay, what's your good news? Why are you smiling? Tell me something good in your world.
Always look on the light side of life.
I'll go first. We got cable. I'm a Wi-Fi friendly household.
If life seems jolly rotten,
last night we watched the first episode of Mad Men. I couldn't believe it. Color television right there in my very own living room.
Feeling in the dumps.
I missed it. You know how they say, oh, you won't miss it? I missed it tremendously.
That's the thing.
I'm now wired.
Always look.
How about you, Steve? Why are you smiling today?
I'm really not enjoying the book I'm reading right now, and it's almost done.
Always look on the bright side.
I don't know if the man in sports wants to do a bright side. Maybe we'll check on them and... Elif, are you going to do a bright side? Elif's busy. All our phone lines are ringing anyway, so let's start picking up some phone lines. Hey, Paul, you go first. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling today?
Hi, John. I'm going to Jimmy Buffett tomorrow night with my wife to celebrate our 30th anniversary.
Oh, very nice. Have a great trip, my friend. I'll be in the neighborhood. Carl, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hey, John, I am so happy I'm going to the College of DuPage tonight for an outdoor concert with my new Lithuanian girlfriend, Alina.
The light side of life.
This is Kevin. Well, you get the feeling he wasn't sure of that name. Hey, Kevin, this is John. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling?
I smile every day, John, because of my wife, Peggy. She is my bright side. It took me a few times, but I've got it now.
Just purse your lips and whistle. That's the thing.
Hey, Jerry, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Jer?
John, with all the tragedy and water and everything and the people who reached out, some of the friends that you didn't really know were your friends, and they were the first one to say, do you need help? You need help sandbagging? Are you okay? That is awesome.
This is Kim. You're on WGN. Kim, why are you smiling this afternoon?
Hi, John. I'm smiling because today is my 27th wedding anniversary. Happy wedding anniversary, Jim Chevalier.
So always look on the bright side of life.
Hey, Carolyn, give me some good news. Give me something to smile about.
Well, my 15-month-old daughter has been working on walking, and something clicked last night, and she's been walking all over the house, and it makes me so proud.
You're not crying just a little bit here, are you, Carolyn?
Maybe just a little.
Life seems jolly rotten. There's something you forgot.
I love that sentence. She's been working on her walking, and then it clicked. Hey, Brian, why are you smiling this afternoon? You're on WGN.
Hi, King John. After 6.5 months of being unemployed, I finally am starting work on Monday.
How about that? What are you going to be doing? What's the good company you're going to be working for there, Brian?
It's customer service. They're in Skokie. It's called Amaro Beltec.
Hey, good luck to you, man, and welcome back to the tax-paying world.
Thank you very much, John.
You must always face the curtain.
This is John. You're on WGN. John, why are you smiling this afternoon, John?
John, I'm smiling because I'm 475 days cancer-free.
Attaboy. Attaboy. John, thanks for the call.
You bet.
Hey, Faye, what's your good news? Why are you smiling?
I'm smiling because you're back.
That's it?
King John, no. But oh. I do have a little problem. A previous caller said that Manuka, where you went to high school, that Shanahan is a suburb. He had it wrong. Shanahan is the big town, and Manuka is a suburb. Just purse your lips and
always look on the bright side of life. As a longtime student at the Manuka Community School System, I beg to differ, but this is the bright side and not the time or place. How about, is it Bridget? Bridget, this is John. You're on the air. What's your bright side?
My birthday's in about 17 to 18 days.
17, 18 days, something like that. How old will you be, Bridget?
10.
Have a great birthday, okay?
Thank you.
Hey, Don, give me some good news. Why are you smiling this afternoon?
Hello, King John. Well, first off, happy birthday, Bridget, because any 10-year-old needs to hear that a lot of times. And I'm smiling because next week I'm going to Dallas, Texas with my lovely wife for the Mary Kay convention.
Is that a lot of fun?
It's very cool. Yeah. It really is. It's neat.
They do a big show, don't they?
They do a big show. It's very cool. Hey, and I sent you an email about your long jumping, too.
I was just going to ask that. This is the same Don, I believe, that sent me an email saying that my 20-foot long jump in high school would do what in Coal City?
You wouldn't have hit the stadium record for Coal City, but you'd have got close, and it certainly would have qualified you for the state meet that year.
Wow.
You got to answer that email, too.
I will. Thank you, Don.
Thanks, John. For life is quite absurd, and death's
the final word. You must always fight. Hey, Sarah, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
It's actually my daughter, Riley. She's two. Riley's Tom. The puppy.
I'm playing a potty.
Home run! Potty trained at two. Oh, that's your bright side, Sarah. Who are we kidding? Thank you for the call. Always look on the light side. There's another Don on line four. Hey, Don, what's the good news in your world? Why are you smiling this afternoon, Don? Hey, Donnie.
I'm smiling because... Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air. Go ahead, Don.
I'm smiling because I'm back to work after 5.5 months. I was out due to an automobile accident.
Oh, man. You sound great. You feeling better now?
Oh, much better. Thank you. Look on the bright side of life.
Come on. Hey, Mark, why are you smiling? You're on WGN. What's your bright side, Mark?
My cat's name is Twyla, and she is not dead. She was hiding. She got into my pizza, and my question for the cat lovers everywhere is this. Was she scared because she got caught eating it, or was she angry because I took it away from her? But she is alive. Always look on the
bright side of life. Hey, Gail, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. My bright side is... this week, I became a great-grandmother for the first time, and I'm loving it. Always look on
the light side of life. Hey, Steve, this is John. You're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hey, John, I haven't talked to my little brother in almost 4 months because he's been really mean, but it's because he has Asperger's, and he called me last night, and we talked for almost an hour, and he apologized, and I love my little brother. That's the thing.
Hey, Claire, you're on WGN. What's your bright side?
Hi, John. After 5 months of chemo and some surgery, I finished 7 weeks of radiation today. I need a vacation.
You sound great. You look great. Good luck to you, Claire.
Thank you.
All right, time for maybe one more. Sue, wrap it up. What's your bright side? Why are you smiling, Sue?
Hey, I've got a wonderful husband, and with a lot of hard work, we paid off our house and our car.
Like recently?
like last month.
Oh, man. You just got a big raise. You just got a big raise,
yes,
didn't
we
you?
We did.
Oh, man. I didn't even know that was possible. I didn't know that was an option. Actually, I have paid off a car before, and there's no better feeling than that. A house? I don't know if that'll ever happen. 256. That's the bright side. Thank you for your calls. Thank you for your texts. Didn't read many of them, but we'll make sure we get more of those up and on the air next week. We do it every Friday. That wraps up the show. Here's Anna DeVlantis. Go.
Wow, I didn't even get my headphones on. It's like, wow.
That was mean. That was mean. Yeah, she was just getting situated, and I just threw that on her. How are you, Anna DeVlantis?
Good, good. I love listening to The Bright Side. Because, you know, when you have a hectic Friday and things are just kind of, you know, maybe not falling in line the way they should, I like to hear everyone else celebrating the small things in life.
That's what they do. And it's nice, too, because sometimes it's people who just beat cancer, and then it's other people who found their cat.
I know.
So I love the range.
And it helps.
Large and small.
Hearing all of it. So... thanks for sharing, everybody. We're going to be sharing with you today as Michael Steele, the former head of the Republican Party, will be with us talking about all things Washington, everything going on with the latest revelations.
Has anybody else been to that meeting now? Because every day...
Were you at the meeting?
We're
adding people by the day.
Roe's not here right now because he's at the meeting. He's actually with Donald Trump and some Russians.
He may be huddling with lawyers, denying he was ever at that meeting. I don't know, but he will be here. Susan Schmidt will be talking about your money, some interesting things going on in the market as we continue to set some new highs, and things are really happy there. Speaking of the bright side, we've got the Carnival Wagon rolling today.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with that.
Old-fashioned drinks or something like that.
Yes, exactly.
So
you're
doing
retro.
Old-fashions or retro drinks?
It's a retro bistro. So they kind of take, you know, what's old and make it new again. And I think they mix it up a little bit in a new way, too. So
maybe I'll swing by around 5.
You know, it's funny. We get a lot of visitors, and they pretend to be here for us. Hey, Ro, Anna, I haven't seen you in a while. And it's like, oh, and there's cocktails.
Oh, my gosh.
And it's a Friday.
I hate to be rude. I'll have one, you know.
You come by. You'll be welcome anytime. Plus, Richard Roper here to talk about all the new movies, including War for the Planet of the Apes, generating a lot of buzz.
Yeah, so that's good.